Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Norman Night Show. We're coming to you live from Bowie, Maryland. It's March the 19th, and a happy St. Joseph's Day to all of you. I don't really understand why, but everything is slow tonight on the Norman Night Show. Everything's reacting. I hear another or a lot of bad habits. I want to stop this thing, and it won't stop. It won't stop. Hey, 99.53, welcome to the Norman Night Show. I can still hear the intro music in the background. I can't get it to stop. I'm not really sure what's going on. I think it's dead finally. Yes, I do. All right. I had a couple of instances of Blog Talk Radio on the screen in front of me, and I think I got it all straightened out. Welcome to the Norman Night Show. We got some big things to talk about. I got into a brush up on the internet not too long ago when I mentioned that I was very excited that we had a former Jesuit as the Pope. Yes, he is a former Jesuit. Jesuits take a vow never to accept the office of a bishop. And before Francis I could accept his post even as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he had to be released from that vow as a Jesuit. And it is my understanding that though he's still a Jesuit in spirit, he ceased to be a member of the Society of Jesus when he was released from that vow. And that's okay. He wanted to be released from that vow. I hope everybody can hear me. Hey, 99.53, if you can hear me, all right, just give me a heads up in the chat room. I see you there. I hope you're let me know. Tonight, yes, as I said, we're going to talk about the Pope. Yes, we are. Francis I. And we're going to talk about liberation theology. But before we talk about all of that stuff, the first thing I'd like to do, this is a very big feast day for Italians, and I did get my wish because even though the Pope may not be an Italian national, he is an Italian. And it's really funny because my family physician or my doctor is from Buenos Aires, and he also is Italian. And they got to be kind of close in age. I'm not even sure. But anyway, we got an Italian Pope. I'm happy. We got a Jesuit Pope. I'm happy. And as everyone knows, the Jesuits were actually, some people would say, the originators of liberation theology. Some people say it's Catholic Marxism. I don't particularly think of it that way. I prefer to think of it as the idea that Catholics believe as much in the corporal works of mercy as they do in any of the other works of mercy. And in fact, in my Catholicism, the corporal works of mercy are as important as any that we have. I got some guests coming in the chat room, but they're coming in and going out. I guess everybody thinks the topic of, hey, Blondie, so good to see you tonight on the Norman Knight Show. I wish you'd come on the phone, but I'm glad to have you in the chat room. Oh, my God, as quick as you got here, you logged out. I'm really hard to hear that, but it's almost kind of impossible to speak to the radio and not hear anybody talk back. It's been 10 minutes. Oh, Libertarian Hoedown, welcome to the Norman Knight Show. I remember you from the last time we were here. I hope you're coming from the left side of the libertarian idea spectrum. A left libertarian is really a very interesting person, and at least in my view. And I guess you would call me a left libertarian because I believe, as left libertarians do, that natural resources belong to everyone and no one should profit from the ownership of natural resources because nobody can really own them. But back to liberation theology. And don't worry, all you listeners out there who are waiting to hear my views on Steubenville, because I'm going to have some, and maybe we'll dedicate the second half of the show to Steubenville, because I heard some disturbing stuff tonight, and I have to verify it. But I've been enlightened quite a bit to the rape culture in the last week or so, and so I'm really interested to talk about it. Anyway, I don't want to talk about it just now. But why doesn't somebody give me a call? But anyway, liberation theology, it probably, some people call it an attempt to interpret scripture through the plight of the poor. I think of it more as an attempt to make this place a world where human beings, no matter what their status in a society, are treated with respect. And that human beings have the right to eat, to have a place to sleep, and to be able to make more of themselves with dignity and the expectation to be able to feed them. I guess you could say that liberation theology is an attempt to have the poor share in the wealth of the society and upgrade their status to where they are more than a peon living in a car, living in a cardboard box. And there is no question that liberation theology has very strong Roman Catholic roots, particularly among the priests of the society and brothers of the Society of Jesus and all of the nuns who work with them to bring liberation of the spirit through liberation of the body to people everywhere. It originally came under great fire until the Second Latin American Bishops' Conference, which was held in Medellin, Colombia in 1968. Liberation theology's basic tenet is to study the Bible and to fight for social justice in Catholic communities. Really, the only way that wealth was ever redistributed, the only model for wealth being redistributed in South America was the Marxist model. And so liberation theology became associated with that model. The redistribution of wealth in South America, some would say, definitely had a Marxist flavor. The use of populism or revolt was encouraged by those who worked with the poor, and liberation theology became mired in Marxist doctrine and revolutionary causes. There was a reaction after the second, after the Medellin conference, and by the 1980s, the Catholic hierarchy was criticized the South American bishops, right from Pope John Paul down. Remember, he was the Polish pope who came from communist Poland. That's where he grew up. That's where he lived. Right from the pope down, the church accused liberation theologians of supporting violent revolution and outright class struggle. I don't know. Liberation theology, okay, there we go. Sorry. Liberation theology moved from the poor peasants of South America to the poor blacks of North America and resulted in something that's now called Black Liberation Theology. It's Marxist, it's revolutionary, it's humanistic. In the same way that revolutionary theology was classified in South American theology. Some people say it's false doctrine. I don't think so. I think that the basis of liberation theology is the dignity of the human being. And that's what Jesus Christ preached. Remember, Christ spoke about treating the least of his creatures as himself. In other words, treating poor people as if they were the Christ themselves. And that's where I stand right now. The only one I got logged in the chat room is the Liberation Hoedown. Let's talk some more about liberation theology. Here's a source. Let's go look in the Moody Handbook of Theology. I didn't even know that this existed. Oh, you got to go buy it. Of course you got to go buy it. But that's all right. I'm not going to. I've never really heard of or thought about Black Liberation Theology. So let's go see what it is. Now, there's no question Black liberation theology is an offshoot of South American liberation theology. It applies Christian theology to the plight of the poor, though it focuses on Africans in general and African Americans in particular, being liberated from all forms of bondage and injustice, whether social, political, economic, or religious. There is no greater bondage than hunger. There's no greater bondage than homelessness. There's no greater bondage than loneliness. Now, when Marx talked about religion as the opiate of the people, he wasn't talking about a religion that tries to free the people from that bondage, at least in my view, but he was talking about a religion that told the people, be happy with the way things are, offer it up, the old offer it up. Oh, I can't tell you the times I heard that growing up in my youth. Offering it up. Offer it up. Remember, social injustice is a sin. And deliverance from that social injustice is one of the roads to salvation. But that's, it really doesn't matter whether it's Black liberation theology or South American liberation theology or Appalachian liberation theology. The purpose of the idea is to liberate the poor. That's what we're talking about here. Hey, 22660, welcome to the Norman Knight Show. We have been talking about liberation theology now for about 20 minutes. So what do you think about it out there? What do you think this new pope is going to do with it? Give me a call, 347-945-6713, and we'll talk some more. I would love to talk liberation theology well into the early hours of the morning. I got into quite a... what would you call it? Rhubarb, if you would, with some of the people on Facebook when I was excited by Pope Francis being a former Jesuit or a Jesuit and being excited by, and he is Francis the First. And part of the reason there's never been a Francis in the past, at least in my view, is because the interesting thing was Francis There are two Francises who are great saints of the Jesuits, Francis Assisi and Francis Xavier. Francis Xavier himself was a Jesuit, and in fact was the Jesuit who went to the East and died a martyr trying to spread the Catholic faith to India. And the Jesuits have always, since that time, had as one of their, I guess they call them charisms now, have had giant missions. I could tell you stories about the big mission dance, which always happened during Lent back in my high school days. It was the only dance in the whole Diocese of Buffalo. And sometimes we came under some fire for having the dance, but all of the money raised for the dance, at least when I was at my Jesuit high school, and that is Canisius High School in Buffalo, New York, which, by the way, is the same high school that the new Secretary of Labor graduated from. Yes, Mr. Perez was born and raised in the Buffalo, New York metro area, and he also went to Canisius High School, 1180 Delaware Avenue, in that great, or formerly great, city on the lake. Ah, for the old days of Buffalo, but they'll never come back. They'll never come back. We're not going to make steel. We're not going to make cars. And we're not going to slaughter animals and mill flour in Buffalo, New York anymore. But anyway, that gets us a little bit off topic. I'm easy to get off topic. So if you're sick of hearing about this liberation theology stuff, why don't you call 347-945-6713 and take me to a different topic? I got to get a cup of coffee, so I'm going to put some music on for a couple of minutes, and I hope you enjoy it. And I hope you think about all your bad habits. I'll be right back.
But what the doctor says
Yeah, I got a lot of bad habits. I'm back. And one of the bad habits I have, some people say, is I love talking about things Italian. And one of the things that I always remember, it's St. Joseph's Day. And there's always special food to eat on St. Joseph's Day. And, well, there's all kinds of St. Joseph's Day traditions, but one of the really super things about St. Joseph's Day that I always liked was St. Joseph's Day bread. And here's a recipe for St. Joseph's Day bread. Well, it said it was a recipe for St. Joseph's Day bread, and I don't see it here. That's kind of disappointing. I thought it would be... let me try it again. I'm not 100% sure what's happening, but we're not getting a recipe for St. Joseph's Day bread. Well, I'll be doggone. I don't know. One of the things I always liked about St. Joseph's Day is that the pasta is often made with anchovies. And if there's anything I like, it is anchovies and cooking with Nona. Easy spaghetti with breadcrumbs and garlic. Cauliflower florets. Cauliflower, I always loved it. Oh, look at all these wonderful things. Marianne's Italian hard rolls. Pasta with fresh sardines. What a marvelous pasta consarde. What a possibly wonderful meal. That's another nice thing by... Here's some real easy Italian homemade bread. Beautiful Italian woman on the label. It's really easy to make St. Joseph's bread. 5 teaspoons of yeast, 1 tablespoon of sugar, very hot water, not quite boiling, 8 cups of bread flour, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 hot cups of water, 1 stick of melted butter, 1/4 cup of Evo. Oh, they won't tell me the directions. I guess you put it all together and mix it up. Oh, God, there's a picture of Italian consardi. Oh, maloney. Bucatini, chopped tomatoes, medium-sized sardines. Oh, 4 fillets of anchovies in oil. Garlic. Fennel, pignoli, pine nuts. I don't really like them. I leave them out of mine. What am I talking about? I'm talking about St. Joseph's Day. Come on to the Norman Night Show, and you can hear I'm about to talk about... I really could use somebody calling in, and then somebody's calling me on Skype, wants to know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about food you eat on St. Joseph's Day. That's what I'm talking about right now. But let's turn to a more serious topic. Two kids were convicted of rape on Sunday in Steubenville, Ohio. A 17-year-old boy and a 6-year-old boy were found drunk, were found guilty of raping a drunk 16-year-old girl. Now, that's a very serious situation. 17-year-old boy, 16-year-old boy, and they jump on a drunk girl. On the surface, that's a horrible thing. I agree that it's a horrible thing. Why did it happen? I don't know. They were tried as juveniles. They also obviously took pictures of the young girl because they disseminated a nude photo, and one of them was convicted of disseminating the photo of a minor. The victim was not in the courtroom. The mother said, human compassion is not taught by a teacher, a coach, or a patient. It is a God-given gift instilled in all of us. You displayed not only a lack of this compassion, but a lack of any moral code. The woman said her daughter would persevere and move on. The boys won't. They won't just move on. She wants to get back with her normal life. That's what the mother said. I don't know what to say here, except I don't know. I don't know. I'm, like, baffled here. Now they want to convene a grand jury. I don't know. How did the girl get drunk? Yes, that's a very serious question. If these boys got her drunk, they should lock them up in jail forever. It's really interesting here. The victim testified Saturday that she remembered little about the night because she was drunk. During closing statements on Saturday, attorneys for the two boys argued that the state failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that their clients raped the girl. The usual, they put the victim on trial, bringing the girl's credibility. And they wondered if the pictures and the media coverage tainted the trial. There's no question the girl was impaired. That made her an imperfect witness. That she doesn't remember a lot. She was a victim. The girl testified that she remembered drinking at the first big party of the night. So the girl had gone out to engage in the behavior that takes place at these parties. And that she and Mays, one of the convicted boys, were holding hands when she left. She woke up and she then remembers waking up in the morning in an unfamiliar house. She looked for her clothes. She could not find her underwear. She had a flashback memory of throwing up in a street. It's really horrible. The boys treated the girl like a toy. Again, they tried. One person said that the victim thought she was drugged. They saw the girl drink. The judge, to his credit, I guess, did not admit the only thing anybody can testify to was that he saw one of the boys putting fingers in the girl's vagina during a drive from one party to another. He deleted the video. It's not clear whether or not there was insertion. I don't know what to say about this. Hey, I got some callers. Go ahead, you're on with Norm.
Hey, guy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm not doing real well. I wish I'd have left this conversation off the docket, but it needs to be talked about.
Oh, you had two topics, liberation theology and...
theology
and the Steubenville thing. Yeah.
Not for talking about the event in Steubenville, Ohio.
Yeah. I have some familiarity with it, but
on trial here.
It's what they did, whether, you know, they, where it was, you know, well, these are felony charges. Let's put it that way. I don't see any way these kids should get off easy. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Oh, I just thought the silence was...
Go ahead, John.
Okay. So... You know, in my view, these are felony charges.
I know.
At the age of 16 or 17, you should be aware. If you're not aware, I don't know, you know, don't blame anyone else for it. And, yeah, I think whatever the maximum term is you can give them, I really think they should have been tried as adults. I believe all felonies, whether they're minors or not, should be treated as adults. And I would not go easy on them. I did see a portion of the video.
Yeah.
And they laughed their ass off through the whole thing. You know, there was no remorse. Nothing. So, yeah, you know. You do things like that. You do things like that. You ruin your life. You ruin her life. And that's it. These are the consequences. We pay for our crimes.
I want somebody to tell me. But never mind. I'm not even going to ask that question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I'm on these types of issues. I'm not real sympathetic. You know, I'll just put it that way.
Well,
yeah, there is a.
This is what really bothers me. I don't think this was one-time behavior. Hey,
412, okay.
Go ahead. You're on with Norm.
Hello. Yeah, I'm still listening. Keep talking.
All right. Go ahead, 916.
Okay. You know, there's a good piece from, you know who Henry Rollins is? Black Flag?
Who?
Henry Rollins?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he wrote a very good piece on that. Maybe I can find a link. I'll send it to you. Well worth reading.
All right, I like that. Thank you.
And, you know, I understand that a lot of people are intellectualizing this, and they want to know, well, is it the parents? Is it society in general? Is it the football jock culture? On and on we go with this, right?
I understand. The one question I had, and I realize that people are going to say, oh, you're putting the victim on trial.
Yeah, exactly. And see, this is the thing.
But,
you know, that should never happen. Just because she got drunk?
I know. They weren't pouring the vodka down her throat. They weren't pouring the beers down her throat.
Norm, you never know. She could have been roofied. And she could have been roofied. And, Norm, it's not I don't think it's a problem that she has every right to go to a party and drink. That does not imply that she wants to be raped or have sex.
Yeah.
Even if she wants to have sex, that does not imply that she wants to have to be raped.
Now, wait a minute.
Norm.
I'm just listening.
Yeah.
I'm being educated here. Educate me.
Okay,
appalled that you would say that. I'm appalled at the fact that you mentioned that she was drunk and
did I ever say that? It was in the court testimony.
Okay.
It was in the court testimony.
Yeah. Well, okay, Norm, here's something that I know you can relate to.
When we were
in our teens and 20s,
yeah,
there was a culture, and it was basically agreed upon that you could get a girl drunk and then do whatever you want. Do you think so?
But I never got anybody drunk.
Right, but
no, that excerpt today, too, I agree.
Generally, that was true. I mean, you know, it was acceptable. It was talked about in those terms.
But I will say there was, and I'm talking about Crystal Beach.
Well, yeah, that's probably the best example.
There was accepted. Wait a minute. There was accepted mores of what was going to happen at those parties.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
Everybody came there of their own free will. And I don't know. I'm sure some people forced some people into doing things they didn't want to do.
Yeah, I'm sure that happened.
But I never did.
Yeah, same here. I mean,
but I don't think
you
did, at least what I knew of you. And what disturbs me is that behavior exists. And that people go to those parties and that people drink and they know damn well what's going to happen. And they do it.
Norm, no, I have to stop you there, Norm. I really have to stop you there. And again, let me start by saying that this has nothing to do with you. You not doing anything, you are being stubborn. That's great. This has nothing to do with you. This has to do with those kids out there and those things that are happening out there in the society. And again, to the other point that you were saying, those people who go drink there, if you ask a girl if they want to be raped when you go to that party, I'd be shocked. Do you think they'll say, yes, I want to be raped at this party? I want to have my pictures taken, naked pictures taken,
you know,
and put it up in the internet?
Okay, but no, now you're asking different questions. If you ask that, well, I don't...
Norm, what if, okay, I'm going to ask you a very hard question, okay? I'm going to ask you a very hard question. I'm going to apologize for this, but let me ask you a question, okay?
Okay.
Put this context of your daughter. Would you, after, if this had happened to your daughter, would you scold your daughter for getting drunk or getting to that party, or would you have the same feelings that you're having right now, that it was her fault because she went to the party?
I feel like that presidential candidate when they asked him if he would shoot somebody who raped his wife. The first thing I would do, okay, and I'm going to carry this all the way out. It has always been pounded, and I've not pounded in, but talked into my family's heads, you are responsible for what you do. Now, if I go out and drink and kill somebody with a car, I am responsible for that. Whether I was in control of my... Now, if it happened to my daughter, I don't know. I'd be mad.
No, Norm, you see, this is the most important part. Because as a person, as you are a person who would never be raped. You are a male. We all are male. When we go to a party, we never have to worry about that. And we will never be able to understand how this affects women. And the only way to understand this just a little bit, tiny bit, is to think about how it would relate to our near and dear ones. And if you say that you don't know how would you react if it was your daughter, that just means that you haven't given this a little bit thought. What you're arguing right now is about. I mean, it's not your fault that you think this way, but it's time to open up. And I really persuade you to think about how would it have affected if she was your daughter. And the case about drunk driving and... Drunk, that is completely irrelevant.
If I say to somebody, don't go to those parties, don't drink, then I'm being some kind of a beast.
No, you know what you should be saying? You should be saying, or we should be teaching our kids that don't rape other people. We should not be telling our daughters and our friends and our girlfriends, don't go to a party because you'll be raped. We should be saying that to boys and those people that they should not rape anyone, no matter if they're drunk, no matter what. So this is this is our society's fault. Like, this is how this is the way you view, this incident is a whole lot of people view this incident. And that's why this sympathizes those two kids, because they are the victims there. They are the one whose life got ruined. And what you said before about like how that girl will be able to carry on and live her life, that is outrageous. How can you say that? Like, that girl just got raped, gang raped. How can anyone say that, you know what, you can just live on your life? And two kids, who poor football kids, their future is ruined? Like, that is outrageous. When this happens in India, people in America talk about how society in India is so backwards. This Western civilization is so much better, and we treat women so much better. And this happens right here in America. And guess what? And guess what is happening now? It's exactly the same case that's happening in India. In India, those people would be hanged right now, to be honest. Those two kids would be hanged on a tree in front of everyone.
Now, see, I think these kids, like I said, I've already said, I wanted them treated as adults, which means much higher sentences for prison, registering as sex offenders, the whole damn thing, you know.
They're going to have to do that anyway.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know, Now, they're gonna go to a juvenile detention facility for a minimum of 1 year. And after that, we don't know.
I mean,
they could be let out after a year, or they could stay till they're 21, you know.
And you know what else? If they had been tried as adults, it would have been a jury trial, and they may have been found not guilty.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the evidence, the whole thing. And if they were found not guilty, then there's nothing you can do about that either. I mean, we're using our judicial system properly.
I just don't think there are any difference in the boys in the Duke lacrosse scandal.
Yeah. Oh, that, I don't know if that's such a great, proved out to be completely, totally fraud. I mean, it was.
It's the whole atmosphere. We say that that's okay. Well, it's not okay. Because when kind of situation exists, the thing that happened is what happens.
Well, I don't think anyone's objecting to that or disagreeing with you.
And
now, if you saw, do you want to just talk about it culturally? Because that's about the only thing we can really do.
I don't know. I just found it, the whole athletic culture, the whole jock culture, the whole let's go out and drink ourselves into oblivion so we really don't know what happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
That as long as we drink ourselves into oblivion, it's never your fault.
Right. Oh, that's centuries of our history and culture, for God's sake.
We got to change it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, granted, you know, there are social mores that, you know, are taught, not always taught directly, but indirectly by example from parents and teachers and civic leaders and what have you. And the kid is supposed to catch some of that to know how to behave in society. And if he gets it, great. And if he doesn't, then welcome juvenile hall. You know, that's how that works. I do, you know, I mean, you're still in contact with kids and school and teaching, so I know you have a better, you know, you're more in touch with it, and I've been away from that for way, way long, so I don't really know. I don't know if these things are being taught anymore.
Well, I listen to them speak to each other. I never would have thought of speaking to each other like these kids do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe that's my fault.
Yeah.
Maybe so, it is.
Yeah, well. Yeah,
come on, 413, don't go away on us.
No, I'm listening.
All right.
I mean, our school is very different from an average school, and I think the students in our school are much better understanding of this than any other public school. And I don't really blame.
Let's not get too identifying about schools, please.
Okay. Yeah, I won't.
But let's just leave particular schools out of the equation.
Okay. Oh, but it's
just our own safety.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And these things, they're coming up. I mean, people are starting to talk about it, and that's great. And you hear a lot about these in the internet. And this is really good. And I'm very happy about that. We were talking about it. And I don't blame an average person coming out and then when people have misconceptions like you do, Norm. I don't really blame you or any other person. But I appreciate the opportunity that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say that, especially with just 3 minutes to go. But I want to read the Eurasian theology argument. I really do expect this Jesuit Pope or former Jesuit Pope to revive it. At least the guy's Italian. And, yeah, I'm a big fan of liberation theology. It does hold for a redistribution of wealth and the dignity of all human beings. Sure. Yes, it does.
Well, you know, Pope Benny was a serious critic of liberation theology.
I know, so was John Paul.
John Paul I, the
Medellin Declaration from the conference in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
John Paul was not a lover of Jesuits.
Yeah.
At all.
I don't know.
He was the first pope that ever brought the Jesuits to heel.
Mm-hmm.
Fired all the top Jesuits and picked his own.
Yeah.
And nobody ever did that before.
I have to say that the charity I give the most money to, Sister Libby. Sister Libby undoubtedly is a proponent of liberation theology. And as much as I may criticize liberation theology in practice, I trust her implicitly that any money I give, 100% of that will go to poor people, mostly homeless. And I know that. So regardless of the ideological difference, I'm willing to give my money to people who I know where it will have the maximum effect. I think he's a Carmelite. I'm not sure exactly, but I think that's it.
The important thing about liberation theology was the idea that don't suffer the indignity heaped upon you for a higher place in heaven.
Right. Well, you know, I look at it, it's a bottom-up process. And the problem that the Vatican and the Church has is it doesn't respect or obey or acknowledge the hierarchy to the extent that they will even interpret scripture and doctrine at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not top down anymore from the Pope, it's from the bottom up. And that gives them a problem.
That's always been the Jesuit way. You've had the last word tonight. Just remember, 95,000 people have listened to the Norm and Knight Show. And you all keep listening because you just may be the 100,000 listener. This is Norm saying
what am I
going to
get?
I don't know. A can of tuna fish. I don't know. But we'll see you all next week, and thanks for tuning in tonight. We're out of here. Good night.
Take care, Norm. Good night.
All right.